Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Today, I speak with my good friend Ellie Stokes, who is also the front person of the dark cabaret alternative rock band Grublin. We talk about Ellie's top five favorite albums, the very real struggle to write about anything other than grief, touring with a chaotic psychedelic theater group, and so much more. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode.
Hi, Izzy.
Hi, Ellie.
How are you?
Boy, it's been an eventful few hours. I worked today literally in a horizontal position and had to turn my camera off for all of my Zoom meetings because I tried doing a stretch last night, like a pigeon stretch, felt something pop in my hip.
Oh no.
And then just felt excruciating pain trying to stand up.
Oh my God. So that's insane.
So I go to the ER and they're just like, okay, we're gonna do an ultrasound. They do the ultrasound and they're like, dude, there's literally nothing wrong with you. We think you just have a strained muscle and it's probably going to go away within the next few hours with some Tylenol. And I was like, so ready to be like, oh, why are doctors and all of that? I go home. I go home. I take the quick dissolving Tylenol in a 4-hour cycle. I lie down. I clock out of work. I get up. And I feel totally fine.
Oh my God. Bodies are so weird. Bodies are so weird.
Bodies are freaky.
That is very eventful. It's like, sorry guys, I don't know what to do. Oh God, that's crazy. I'm glad it's better now though. I'm glad it wasn't like a serious situation. But that's annoying.
Same here. It was very painful. It was so painful at first. I like had trouble sleeping. I was just like, I have to get up and do something about this.
Yeah.
Oh, but that
bless
was
bless Tylenol. Bless Tylenol.
Bless Tylenol all day. But that was my very eventful hours. How are you?
That's crazy. I'm good. I'm working from home today too. So I like took some liberties and I like took a shower and I was like, yes, I love it. I'm doing good. I work as like an artist manager as like my day job. So we had like a big festival this weekend, Outside Lands in San Francisco, and a few of our clients played. So it was just like constant working all weekend. It was insane. But now I'm like finally seeing the light again and I'm like chilling out more. So that's great. It's fabulous.
That's really cool. Do you work for a specific management company?
Yeah, I work for Another Planet Management. We manage like I didn't know a lot of the bands that they manage like when I joined, which is like over a year ago, but now I'm like pretty I'm obviously like familiar with all them, but we just took on a new band. I think you'd really dig them. They're called No Vacation. They're from the Bay Area, but they were based in Brooklyn for a while and they're really cool. They're awesome.
That's really cool. Are a lot of the clients like similar vibe wise, or is it like a whole variety of different sounds and styles and aesthetics on the roster?
It's like a variety. It's mostly like when I started, it was mostly like electronic pop kind of artists, but now we're leaning toward more like indie rock, which is way more up my alley. I'm really excited about it. And like jazz pop rock, which is really cool. So it's awesome. I love it.
Jazz pop rock. Nice. That's a vibe.
Ish. Yeah, it is quite the vibe. I'm all for it.
How was the festival? What were some of the highlights?
It was really fun. It was great. I saw Janelle Monáe, and that was super sick. I love them so much. That was like a dream for me. Like goddess, fucking goddess. So that was like my main takeaway, was just seeing Janelle Monáe, honestly. I was so excited. But yeah, I mean, they also like had a really cool like local stage where they had like local like queer performances, which is really sick. And it was like an open air tent, so they had like drag performers and DJs, and I thought that was really cool. They're just like kind of have a they have a lot more like they're supporting the local community a lot more, which I think is really like all big festivals should do, which is awesome. So it was really fun. It was sick.
Totally. Yeah, that's dope. I love that. So, welcome to the pod. Would you like to introduce what you do and who you are to start us out?
Yeah, totally. My name is Ellie. I am the front woman of a band called Grublin, based out of San Francisco, Bay Area, California. We do like cabaret, dream psych, like dream rock kind of music. And yeah, we've been playing for a little over 3 years now, just kind of coming out of COVID. And yeah, it's been a ride. It's really fun. We just put out a new album too.
Were you in any projects before Grublin musically?
Yeah, I was in a band called Fantasy Spiders in San Francisco, and I played keys and I sang backup vocals, which was really fun. But then COVID hit and it kind of disbanded, but that's kind of where my love for like the local music scene started.
Cool. Also, what was like sort of your first foray into getting into playing music and immersing yourself in local communities, as it were?
Yeah, I was part of this like after school nonprofit program when I was young called the SF Rock Project, and it was like a like an after school kind of program where kids would come after class and learn cover songs and then eventually perform them out in the wild in San Francisco, like at street festivals and at local venues, opening for other bands, and just kind of like to get that music education experience. And that was really influential for me, and I learned about so many different kinds of genres. I mean, my parents were like, they're amazing people in the sense, like, I mean, just in general, but also they have like amazing music taste, and I was very lucky to grow up with that. But playing live music and playing like rock music was really my love started for that with the SF Rock Project, and I love that program. I'm so lucky to have been part of it when I was little.
Yeah, that's so cool. Art youth programs are so important,
Agreed.
and I think the Pacific Northwest and just the West Coast in general even have been so great at keeping these programs afloat, especially all ages programs.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think I like all ages music is like my jam. I think that like every like it all venues honestly should be all ages, like every kid should get the opportunity to perform in a venue or just get to see local music in a venue or just any kind of music in a venue.
Absolutely. So I asked you to come to our chat prepared with your top five albums.
Yes. Okay, I have
So
them. Oh my gosh.
why don't we start with number five? Do a
Number
countdown.
five. Let's do a countdown. Okay, number five. Okay, I'm gonna just read off my list because I'm totally gonna forget. My fifth one is Marry Me by Saint Vincent. I love that album. I feel like I'm just like a huge Saint Vincent fan, and everything she does, I think, is just magical and cool. And she like has a way of creating like a little world within her music, and each album is like its own kind of story. So I really love that album. I turned to a lot of her work for inspiration, and just like her being a really great multi-instrumentalist too is really inspiring. Number four is an album by this artist called Namdi, based out of Chicago, called Please Have a Seat. And it was released recently, but has a lot of effect, like has a lot of influence on my sound kind of as like a musician, and in the way that I kind of wanted to design this last album like a playlist for Grublin. And just he just gets so creative with different kinds of sounds and kind of like instruments and all sorts of things. And it's really interesting. So I love that one. Number three is a Tears for Fears album that's like really overlooked, I feel like, but really interesting and very like psychedelic and kind of weird. It's kind of like their take on God, that one Beatles album. I'm so blanking on the name right now. The Magical Mystery Tour. It's kind of like that, but it's called Everybody Loves a Happy Ending, and it's so fun and theatrical and strange and so unlike anything that they really like that they're really famous for. And I think it's really cool. And they're one of those bands too that just is really inspiring to me because they're still touring new material, which I think is super, super awesome. And it's so like wildly different from what they've done in the past, which is still super awesome. And I love those old songs, but I just think it's really cool when artists kind of like continue to redevelop their sound over the years and just explore new things. And then nearing number one. So number two is Fetch the Bolt Cutters by Fiona Apple, which is another recent one, but I like, you know, and I get so much inspiration from how experimental she is, and also like just being a huge Fiona Apple fan in general. I think it's amazing how she's like kind of grown into her own with the last album that she put out there, or her latest album that she put out there like a few years ago, and has just kind of like taken this idea and run with it, and is just kind of like, I don't give a fuck. Like, this is what we're doing kind of thing. And I think it's super great. And then number one is a local band that has been really inspiring to me like since day one of me really like wanting to pursue writing my own music, and they're called Once in Future Band. They are so fucking awesome. The keyboardist and singer in that band was my piano teacher for a period of time. His name is Joel Robineau, and it's just like really kind of funky, psychedelic prog music that's really dreamy. And I mean, you know, theatrical, I feel like, is a word that keeps coming up, but has been extremely influential to my sound. And that's an album like I constantly revisit, and whenever I listen to it, I find something new, and I like never get sick of it. So yeah, those are my five. It was hard to dwindle, but yeah, those are
Nice.
them.
I love how that's your number one, like something you have like a personal connection, one-on-one connection to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't know, it just defines like why I really started getting into the local scene. I feel like when I was really young and I was like in middle school and high school learning to play piano more like in a rock style, like I'm classically trained, but I really started reinvigorating my love for piano, especially during that time like of my life. And he would play shows, and I just thought it was so cool to go to a local venue and see one of my teachers play. And the music's just really good too. So it just all adds up. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I love that you chose Fiona Apple and Saint Vincent in the same list
Yeah, I
because
love them.
I feel like they have very similar traits as far as their approach to creation. It's always something new and something unorthodox, and people might not get it, but those who get it really get it.
Yeah,
And
totally. I totally agree. Yeah, that's how I feel about it too.
yeah, and I also asked you to prepare a funny, crazy, or fun live experience that you've
Oh,
had in your
yeah.
life.
Yeah. So with Grublin for a while, I mean, it took kind of a while to get the band to this iteration it's at right now. But the first time, like, we played a show where we felt really like, I think, like, more confident in what we were doing and kind of as a unit and like as a group of friends playing music together, was this one show we played at this venue called Brick and Mortar in San Francisco. And we decided to come up with this like just gimmick because we were like, let's just make up something fun on stage. And so we marketed the show as not a concert, but as the, I forget what number it was, but like the 55th annual like a Jazz Crab spring pageant or something. And we'd like change the name every time, but it would be like Jazz Crab Ceremony or something. And so we all I bought these like plastic crowns from the dollar store, and these like plastic crabs, and I like hot glued them onto the crowns, and we like put our crowns on. And the whole time we played our set, we're like, all right, like we're just gearing up to like the big finale, which was like, who's gonna be named Best Jazz Crab of 2022? And it was just so silly and ridiculous and made no sense. And it was one of those things too where like some people were like, what the fuck? Like, I don't understand this. And some people were like, I don't understand this at all. Like, this is so hilarious. And it was just like a really weird, goofy moment. And it was really funny. And we were like right in the middle of the set too, of the two other bands that were playing. So it was kind of, I think, jarring for some people because they were like, what the hell? Like, where is this coming from? But we basically had people like submit names to us on Instagram of like their favorite jazz crab or whatever. And there were mostly like jazz musicians' names that had some kind of like nautical twist to it, which was just super ridiculous and very silly. And then we named the winner, which was shocker, everyone's a winner. And that was like the whole thing, but it was just pure ridiculousness. And I feel like after that night too, like as a group, we were just kind of like, okay, like we're having a lot of fun with this. It's, we're just, you know, we're having a really good time and just kind of being funny and making fun music.
Yeah, and that's the whole point too, is to have fun. I feel like a lot of musicians can get caught up in the taking themselves maybe a little more seriously than they should.
I feel it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So it's important to maintain that silliness, as it were. Yeah. But I love, you said that you came up with like jazz names with like a nautical twist. Do you want to give me like a funny example?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. Oh my God. Oh, one was like Dizzy Gillespinch. I'm trying to remember the other ones. They were so funny. I have it like recorded somewhere. I think I recorded it on, and it's on our Bandcamp. Oh my God. There were so many fun. Someone just put Charlie Parker, like just the name Charlie Parker, like of the musician, which I thought was just funny. One. Oh God. Oh, I'm trying to remember. Oh, Louis Clawstrong instead of Louis Armstrong. It was so ridiculous. Those are a few of them. It was really funny.
That is great. Amazing.
People got creative.
So your music, as I understand, has been described as quote unquote sounds that soften and reset our rigid self-restriction as a trauma response to harmful experiences. I was wondering if you would tell me a little about the trauma response part and how you feel like music can be a vessel to sort of funnel grief into.
Yeah, well, like especially on this last album, all these songs were kind of written during a really particularly like stressful and traumatic part of my life. And yeah, I definitely used music as like a coping mechanism. I was feeling very lost. And that was like the only thing that kind of grounded me and put my experiences into a medium that I felt like were more universal and kind of helped me like relate to myself more in a way, if that makes any sense. But yeah, I genuinely think, I mean, for me, it's kind of rough because it's like, I was just talking about this like with a friend who's also like an artist, like not too long ago. They write a lot about like love, and I'm like, I never write about love. Like I always write when I go through something, which makes it kind of hard to like stay consistent with like songwriting and feeling confident in that, because it's usually written during a time where it's like I'm going through something and I need something to help me kind of cope with it. And it's not just about like, you know, reflecting on the traumatic experiences that happened, but also kind of how I can grow from them myself and like, you know, use my relationships with people to kind of help me get out of a rut and to kind of help other people get out of that rut as well when they're kind of going through something. So yeah, it's a journey. It's a journey for sure.
Yeah. And I also am a big fan of the cabaret sort of space rock vibe that you have going. I listened to it and I could tell, oh, this girl really knows her Frank Zappa. It's
yes.
But I love it so much. And so what sort of gravitated you to that specific sphere of sound when you formed this particular project?
Yeah, Frank Zappa, definitely. That's like interesting you bring that up. I really, really love Frank Zappa's music and just his kind of like ideology as a songwriter. Maybe not the best person, but like like as a creative person, like he's really, is just so interesting to me, and I've been really fascinated with his work. And so yeah, I mean, I think honestly it's just kind of like, I don't, like when I write something, I don't I don't really think about what influences it until later on. Sometimes I listen back to a song and sometimes maybe someone's like, oh, that reminds me of this. And I'm like, oh, that's funny. I've listened to that before a lot. And I feel like that's kind of stuck with me. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I had like a friend describe us as like cabaret, dream pop, psych, or dream psych punk or whatever. And I think it's very fitting, especially within this like new album. It's very galactic and, you know, kind of like a playlist and a little bit theatrical and fun, while also kind of like addresses like traumatic instances in kind of playful ways, I feel like, which make it a little more palatable, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. I'm also curious about how your writing process normally works. Do you normally have like a fully formed poem that's done and then you like walk to your instrument with it, or is it more gradual? Like it sort of comes as you play?
It kind of comes as I play. I usually come up with like a melody first, and then eventually words just kind of fit into it. More recently when I've been writing, and then when I was writing some of the later songs on Wormhole on the album, I kind of wrote them at the same time, which was really interesting. And I haven't really like done that as much before, like in past when I've written things, but I don't know. It was just kind of like a simultaneous thing. Like I'd sing something and it would fit over something I was playing. And then I just kind of workshop it.
And how do you feel like sorry.
You're good.
I got a work emergency message.
No, not work.
No.
Work out.
But we need to repost everywhere else. Oh, okay. All right. I think it might be fine. All right, yeah. So for context, by the way, I also work in the music industry, not quite artist management. I am more on the marketing side. It's just like, I'm sure you know, working in the music industry, like stuff like this arises and you never know
yes.
when.
Oh, I was about to say, like, it's, I empathize because it's like, if you're like, okay, like I'm off the clock, and it's like, am I really though? Like people right. are still looking at social media now, technically. So I have to kind of be on it.
That is true. What are some of your top like life-altering concert experiences that you've had as a member of the audience as opposed to performing?
Oh man, I saw Mike Patton, who is like an amazing, he was in, or is, I guess they're still touring, but they were really famous. They're like popular back in the day, and Mr. Bungle and Faith No More. But he has a solo project, Mike Patton does, just Mike Patton, and he put together this very, here's theatrical again, very theatrical, amazing album called Mondo Cane. And it was just a lot of like Italian arias that he kind of reformatted into these like big band songs. And he performed it at Hardly Strictly Bluegrass, which is a free festival in San Francisco. It's been going on for a long time now. And I went to go see it when he put it on. And I was like, I was really little. I was like probably 11 or 10. And I was just changed. I was like, whoa, this is a really, really cool performance. And just the amount of effort that he put into it was amazing. Another one that I saw that I really, really liked recently was, more recently than that, that was like forever ago, but was Mosswood Meltdown, which is another festival here in Oakland. And there was this band called the Teddy Bear Orchestra. And it was this one guy who was dressed as like this concert maestro. And he built all these like robot teddy bears to play backing music for him. And they like actually play the drums and like he programs them to sing. And like, it's so ridiculous and insane. And I thought it was just so cool. And like, not just really cool musically, like the music was actually really, really good, but just like a fun gimmick and a fun like creative piece and fun live show. So those are my two for now. I have lots more, but those ones are standouts for me immediately.
That's really cool. How old were you again when the Mike Patton show happened?
I was like 11 or 10. My parents are super cool and they love Mike Patton, and they were like, oh my God, like we should take the kids to see this. And it was really awesome. I remember it very well.
That's really cool. I wish that had been the case with my parents. Like, my parents were the people who would have been at that Mike Patton show, but like, they were also helicopter parents when it came to their children. So they would be like,
they're like, don't take me.
No. Yeah. And also, like, yeah, that's really cool. Like, the second experience you mentioned, I saw La Tigre at Brooklyn Steel recently.
Oh, sick. That's so sick.
And they, it was a similar vibe going. Like, they had, it was like an art show, and the comedian slash performer, the queer comedian slash performer Murray Hill opened. It was incredible.
Oh, that's so sick.
And it was also like everything was programmed and stuff like that, but like nobody cares because it's La Tigre. Like, that's the most punk thing ever, and it's so cool. And they did like choreography and everything in these like matching like checker print outfits. It was so sick.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I missed them at Mosswood. I was so bummed. I really, really wanted to see them. But hopefully, again, I think they're still going to do stuff. So hopefully, but they're so, so cool. That's so awesome. You got to see that.
Yeah. And yeah, everyone was like, so it's so cool to see like how hyped everyone was about that particular reunion too.
Yeah. Oh my God. Legend status.
Absolutely. I love J.D. Samson more than life itself.
Yes. Dig.
And so do you want to tell me a little bit about the recent record that you dropped and what the concept was?
Yeah, it's called A Wormhole is a Freeway to the Stars, which is a wordy title, but I feel like kind of captures the whole general vibe of it. And I kind of inadvertently designed the album to be a lot like a playlist. So kind of flipping through with like a radio station or something and hearing all these different songs that are, you know, by the same artist, obviously, but have different kind of like, you know, like instrumental makeups and backing tracks and whatnot. And yeah, I mean, I wrote it during, I mean, you know, as I said, like during a time where I was kind of going through a lot, you know, there's a lot happening in my life and a lot of trauma, but music was an amazing coping mechanism. And it's just so interesting, like looking back on it now, I'm like, wow, I feel like I was a completely different person when writing these songs versus recording them. And yeah, it's just kind of about a universal feeling of going through something, which everyone goes through, you know, traumatic instances or problems with people or with themselves, and kind of overcoming it and finding the people that you can really rely on to make it better for you and to pick yourself back up again.
That's really awesome. How do you feel like, do you feel like that was a very cathartic experience for you personally?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was very surreal. Like, I didn't even think that I was putting out an album until I put it out, until it was like out there and it was like release day. And I was like, whoa, this is kind of insane. And now people can like listen to what I've had in my brain for a really long time and kind of better understand me at that point in my life.
Yeah. And I'm also curious about who you think is an artist that, I don't want to say underrated, but what's like a particular artist throughout history who you think is maybe misunderstood and deserves more respect?
Oh man, I feel like any femme artist, honestly.
All of them.
But all of the femme artists. I think if one were to come to mind in particular, it would, even though like she got a lot of commercial success in the earlier days, is Fiona Apple, because I don't think anyone truly understood at the time what she was going through and how to really help with that. And I mean, I feel like it's really obvious in her latest record, and Fetch the Bolt Cutters, how like she was constantly screwed over and how she had to constantly advocate for herself and go through a lot of these things by herself, despite her being very successful, like commercially. And yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it just goes to show that even though like someone might be really successful or, you know, popular, they, you know, are most, I mean, they're, you know, they can still easily get screwed over or go through things that are traumatic and that can happen to anyone.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like the minute you said any femme artist, like that is it, like it, you're not wrong, because I'm just even thinking about the connotation that a phrase like when someone says, oh, that's like Lilith Fair Rock, like that they it's It's basically just code for unthreatening or silly.
Like, right.
Look, hot woman, ha 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 ha. So like, yeah. Like, so, and people can so easily just use that to minimize like somebody's. Like, because putting your, even putting your art out into the world, like, it's not easy. You, like, bare your soul, yeah. And then you're up for scrutiny by literally every single human being on the planet, and they are just ruthless, and, like, I can't imagine being in someone like Fiona Apple's position, like, especially on top of everything else that happened and went down, yeah. Which, but even just, like, the little, like, things that people say to minimize someone, like, why is Lilith Fair an insult? Like, Lilith Fair was kind of mm-hmm. a big deal, like, and it was people trying to change the landscape. We could have a larger conversation on whether or not, like, they were successful at it, but you know, you know what I'm getting at. It's just like,
I totally get it, yeah.
It's this rhetorical weaponization of things that really shouldn't have a negative connotation, you know?
Yeah, I totally get it. It's like, it just reminds me of like all the things that were going around when like when Sinead O'Connor passed away, and everyone was like, oh, like my heart or whatever, but everyone was like, at the time, like when she was alive, everyone was like, what are you doing? Like, stop being so radical and out there and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, respect women when they're actually alive and making music.
Yeah.
About these experiences that a lot of people go through. So just really interesting.
Yeah. I think I did see that viral edit someone made that was a picture yeah. of Sinead O'Connor with a cigarette or something. And it said, stop being shitty to women when they're still alive or something. I forget exactly what the phrasing was.
Yeah.
But
something like that. Yeah.
But it's true. Yeah. It's honestly like really heartbreaking because.
I know.
Society just kept breaking her and breaking her, and now it's, she was so incredible. Like, I also saw people talking about like what she did to protest award shows. Like, she wore like the Public Enemy symbol like on the side of her head to like protest the racism of the Grammys, and
mm-hmm.
yeah. And I think like it just goes to show that even somebody in like a position of privilege and wealth like Sinead O'Connor, if they make any sort of move towards any hint at radicalism and their politics, which she was like fully unapologetic about and never ever backed down, like not once.
Yeah.
It just goes to show that even if you lean towards that a little bit, like the answer from society is clear. It's time for you to die now.
Right. Which is like, yeah.
This podcast got real dark all of a sudden.
I know. Like, we're talking about some radical issues. Let's go. No, it's good though. It's like, it needs, this is also what art is for, you know, to be able to kind of like, you know, I mean, like, you know, naturally as humans we just want to compartmentalize things, and it's like the true compartmentalization but still getting through to people tactic, I feel like, is making music, because it's like making these things very palatable for people to understand and like digest, which is like what draws me to it as a medium, I feel like.
Definitely. Me too. I've never understood the argument that music and politics should ever be like two separate entities from one another, because like that's impossible.
Yeah.
Like what do you think Irish protest music was for?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like, I mean, everything is politicized now too. So it's like, what's the point in even arguing that? It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So another fun question I have is, if you could curate a festival where you get one reunion, one hologram, and one top headliner, what would be your hologram, reunion, and headliner?
Oh my God. I think, oh man, I feel like my hologram would be Jeff Buckley. just because it's like, what the fuck? It would be amazing to see him play live. A reunion? Oh, God. I mean, trying to think. I think, honestly, I don't know the status in this lifetime of all the members, but an Oingo Boingo reunion would be super sick. Because I know Danny Elfman's still alive, and I love his solo stuff, but, I mean, it would be, like, amazing to see them again. I think they did do a reunion, but, like, for the purpose of this, that would be amazing to see that in person again. And then, what was the other one? It's just, like, a headliner?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Oh, God. Oh, my gosh. This is hard. I mean, I've been saying Fiona Apple a lot, but it would be fucking legendary to see her play live. This would be a very eclectic festival. But, like, seeing her play live again, I feel like would be insane and amazing and, like, life-changing for so many people.
Oh, my God, it would be. Wasn't she going to plan to tour Fetch the Bolt Cutters, too, before the world shut down? I think she mentioned something.
I don't know.
I think she mentioned something about how she, like, acknowledged, like, the land, the indigenous land that the record was recorded in on like the in the liner notes or whatever, and then she said we had planned like when performing it live to acknowledge all the land and stuff like that. So I was like, wait, holy shit, was she gonna tour this,
like actually play this live, which would have been insane.
And that God, was take I, and COVID took that from us. What more could, oh my God.
I know it's rough. Hopefully one day, hopefully. Manifesting, as they say. Manifesting.
And Oingo Boingo, that would be dope too. Like, isn't Danny Elfman like also like doing like film score compositions and stuff?
Yeah, he's been doing it for a while. I mean, he's been doing like, he did like Nightmare Before Christmas and like a lot of the Tim Burton movies. But he came up with like a crazy ass solo album. Like, I think it was a few years ago. It was during COVID for sure, or a little bit after, maybe like lockdown was like really in full effect. And it's fucking insane. It's an amazing album. It's called Big Mess. And it's kind of a big mess in the best way possible. That's great.
What kind of a mess are we talking? Like, what are some of the like elements of the mess?
It's just like really out there. It's like kind of like nu metal, prog, like orchestra, like nightmare orchestra music with him singing, and it's awesome and bizarre, and it's so cool. It's great. I love it.
You might be the first person I've ever spoken to say the words nu metal prog in the same sentence. That is insane. I will definitely have to listen to that.
Yeah, it's wild.
What are your thoughts on nu metal, by the way? What are your thoughts on the nu metal discourse?
Yeah, I don't have many. I mean, I feel like for me, my exposure to nu metal is more through like queer people reclaiming it, which I think is really badass. And I work with like a gay nu metal band based out of San Francisco called Commando, and they have completely reinvented the genre for me. But yeah, I don't know. My immediate thoughts, like other than that, are like, I just think of Woodstock 99 and how much of a fucking mess that was. Talk about messes. Oh my God. Just like an actual living nightmare of a situation. Yeah. So I don't know. That's as far as my thoughts go on it. I also think it's kind of funny if it's done like by a typical like dude group. I don't know. It's ridiculous. It's just funny to me. It's funny.
I mean, it honestly is pretty funny. Like, when you're in the right mood and at the right place, Roland goes hard.
I know. No, it's true. That's, like, my go-to on, like, road trips. It's just kind of fun to, like, roll down the windows, like, listen to, like, Limp Bizkit. No, it's super funny.
Yeah, I've been listening to a really funny podcast series called You Don't Even Like This Band. And
oh, that's awesome.
They did like a whole series on Korn, and they went like deep into like the niche like stuff, like even like that weird time that they had their own brand of Korn coffee.
Oh my God, I didn't even know about that. That's so funny though. That's amazing.
And one of like the hosts of the podcast ordered the Korn coffee and tried it and was like traumatized by it.
Let's go. That's amazing. That's so awesome.
I might have to fuck around and find out and do, and like review the corn coffee on my site.
Yeah. You should. That would be amazing. I didn't even know there was that. I'm definitely looking more into that. That is so funny.
You know what? Now that I think of it, I actually have never Googled it. Corn coffee. Corn fee. Yeah. Oh my God. It is a real thing. Hang on. Where's the chat? I'm dropping it in here.
Yes. Corn web store. Oh my God. This is so exciting. Oh my God. That's so awesome. Yes. That's awesome. Oh my God. I'm excited.
Low key, if that Tumblr were not $48, I might own it. Just like casually.
One day.
Yeah. That's hilarious. But what do you, one of my final questions, I guess, is why in today's current landscape are local music communities and all ages shows still so important, and how do you feel your community has been able to sustain that culture when it feels like it's getting more and more sparse? Like, for example, in Brooklyn, of the all ages venues ended up all just moving to bars, and so like all ages shows are barely even a thing anymore here, but there's still people in the local community working really hard to like make those, to keep those a thing and stuff like that. And it's really great. But I was wondering how, where in your neighborhood and your local community, how you feel like people are doing the good work to keep that culture alive.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that's extremely valuable to me and has always been something I've like really advocated for, especially in San Francisco, because yeah, just like Brooklyn, like especially after COVID, all of these all ages spaces just could not afford to stay open because they didn't have any alcohol, or they, you know, had limited access to what they could do with their space, and then just eventually became bars, like 21 up venues, or just, you know, died out completely, which is really unfortunate. But I feel like now there's a little bit more of a resurgence. There are a lot more opportunities like in the street fair scene here, which is really great. I've done, in addition to like, you know, like my day job and then the Grublin and, you know, everything else I do, I do a lot of booking through like a charity I run called Big Leap Collective, where our goal is to do mostly all ages, well, whenever we can, because yeah, like there's limited space, all ages educational, like, or all ages shows with educational opportunities for people to learn live events skills within like a very inclusive, like DIY, primarily whenever we can, all ages, like accessible environment. And yeah, I mean, I feel like we're kind of in a place now where a lot more venues are opening up to be more all ages, or there are new venues that are kind of on the verge of opening, or, you know, a lot more people are using like college campuses, like SF State is a really big one that actually puts budget into providing local music shows to their students and having people come who are local, like promote these shows and put them all together. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a struggle. I'm friends with a lot of like people who are venue owners or work at venues. There was a really great place. I live in the Sunset District in San Francisco, and there was a really, really great spot called the Honey Hive that was my introduction pretty much to local music. And I used to go there. I used to take the train down. It was like this little garage by the beach. I used to take the train down like almost every weekend and just go see random local shows. They were like $7. I'd like have my cash and like be ready to roll. And I've, you know, since then become friends with the venue manager, who now works at another venue, which I work with a lot here, called Neck of the Woods. That's really great in all ages. But yeah, it's really hard to keep these spaces affordable to people, I feel like, too, because it's really like there's a lot of like nitty gritty with like liquor licenses and just, you know, payment and how, and rent here is insane. Like, I'm sure as it is in New York, too. And it's like, it's just insane. But there are people who are still trying to make that space, and there are a lot more people getting creative with their use of space. Like there are a lot more like art galleries or comic book shops that open up at nighttime so they can have shows, or record stores, which is really amazing. And yeah, it's something I'm close to, because it's like, I grew up on that. And that was my first really like big exposure to music that was accessible and affordable. And I could also find people who were just kind of like, you know, it emboldened me to like have that agency to actually go see things and do things with my friends and not, you know, it made me feel free and powerful in that way. And I think it's really important. And yeah, local communities everywhere, like local music communities, local art communities are just so valuable to everything within like our society. And I love it so much.
They really are. They absolutely are. And I'm so glad that even in spite of the dominant sort of function, like shifting, like we were talking about, and like there's still like so many great DIY spaces where people are just putting on and organizing in a grassroots like style to share art with the people who need it, which is mostly kids. And that's very important. And I'm also curious about a potential mutual connection. Have you played in New York before?
Yeah, I've played solo twice at Misfit Kava Bar. I'm coming back in September and I was going to play a show at Heart Bar, but my flight got moved and I was like, it's probably best for me to not fit everything in. So definitely another time. But yeah, I've played there before.
Yeah. Do you know Katie Ortiz?
I love Purgatory? Katie. We played together at Misfit. Yeah. She's amazing.
Nice.
She's awesome. I love her. Yeah. She's so cool. We're both like lizard ladies. We love our lizards. She's the best. Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that she had added you to her playlist on Spotify, and so I was like, oh, I have to, that's cool.
Yeah, she's awesome. I love her. She's a good one. Her music's amazing.
Oh, her music is amazing. It's
insane.
Stunning. I went to a house show that my friend Sam put together, and Katie did a small like baby Debbie Dopamine set where she only performed songs that she wrote for one time only when she was like 13 years old.
Oh my god, that's so cool. Oh, that's
it was
awesome.
So epic. It was amazing.
I love that. Oh my god, that's amazing. That's so sick.
And before I let you go, what else do you have to shamelessly plug / where can people find you online, all that great stuff?
Yeah, well, my Instagram is at Ellie's Grublin, Ellie is Grublin. And yeah, we just completed like a tour to the Pacific Northwest, which was really fun, and we're just kind of looking to book more stuff in 2024. We're playing some local shows to kind of close out the year here in Oakland and in San Francisco and in Marin County as well. And yeah, and I'm going to New York myself to perform in like a cabaret group, which will be fun, at Joe's Pub.
Joe's Pub, yes. Oh, you will have to.
You should come. Oh
yes,
my God.
DM me when it's happening.
I'll send you the details. It's insane. It's gonna be awesome.
I haven't been to Joe's in forever. Their food is dope. So sorry, I cut you. Keep going.
Yes. Okay, that's amazing. I'm excited for the food. But yeah, I mean, just kind of like planning stuff for the future. We're gonna do a Chicago run at some point and New York at some point as well too. And just kind of booking stuff in 2024, looking for festivals and things like that. But yeah, it's been crazy with this album being out, really excited, and we'll be recording new music in like a few months too, so I'm excited.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for getting on here and gabbing with me about corn coffee and all that good stuff.
Corn coffee. If there's any takeaway, it's that corn coffee is real and we should buy it one day when we're rich and famous.
Yes, when we have disposable income.
Exactly. Yeah. Can't wait for that day. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, well, we'll be filing our 401ks and having our corn coffee with a with a scone.
With our $45 tumblers. It's going to be amazing.
Amazing. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. Thanks again.
You too. Thank you so much, Izzy. You rock.
You rock too. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Ellie of Grublin for joining me today.
Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense.
give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.